Of course, these natural axioms apply with significant emphasis to the element before us. To fulfill the legitimate ends for which this was ordained is to be happy in its exercise. Not to fulfill it, and especially to depart from it, is to suffer in and by its exercise. Now excessive promiscuous and matrimonial and solitary indulgence violate this function and cause pain. We come now to consider the evils consequent on these its perversions. To enumerate the tithe of the evils consequent on excessive sexual indulgence, whether promiscuous or matrimonial or solitary, all one in substance, would fill a world with volumes, as it already has with woes, and keep it full. We shall develop first some of its destruction of health and generation of physical evils and sufferings, next its destruction of the moral tone or stamina, and its production of propensity and depravity. In forms without number, and aggravation beyond description, to enumerate a few. It injures health. To dwell here on the importance of health as a means of enjoyment, and its essentiality to every form and degree of happiness, would take us too far from our subject. Suffice it to say that whatever impairs the health or engenders disease is proportionally fatal to happiness and prolific of suffering. Now that excessive sexual indulgence injures the health, and in a preeminent degree, appears from the following, among its other effects. It exhausts the body. Those at all acquainted experimentally with the nature of this function need not be told that few things are equally exhausting. This function was instituted to transmit the entire mentality and physiology of parents to offspring, and since the latter take on the existing conditions of the former, and these only, it becomes necessary that this function should call forth in a powerful degree of action all the mental, all the physical functions of parents as the means of their transmission to offspring. Now this intense and simultaneous action of all the functions of our nature in this indulgence, of course, proportionally exhausts. A hard day's work does not equally prostrate and fatigue. It enfeebles the mind. Frequent indulgence in any of its forms will run down and run out any one of either sex. Those who would write or speak or study must forego this indulgence or intellectual exertion or else die. Powerful constitutions will stand an immense drain before they finally break, but terrible indeed is the result. Mere animal temperaments are less injured because by supposition their vitality is abundant, and its drain by other functions is slight, nor do they enjoy this function as do those more highly organized, and hence are proportionally less exhausted. Such live, to be sure, so do brutes. Carnal, groveling, sensual, low-lived animals, living mainly on a single pleasure, when their nature serves up so many. Let such revel in lust, because capable of little else. But those highly organized must partake rarely, else it will excite to distraction and proportionally exhaust. Besides, they can expand their less abundant, perhaps deficient vitality to better advantage. Frequent indulgence must necessarily be lustful, and therefore debasing to their higher feelings. Those whose intellectuality and morality are feeble may spend their surplus vitality on this passion with less injury, yet cannot cultivate their higher faculties while they thus revel in lust. Let such remain all animal and revel on, but for those who have already too little vitality to sustain their higher faculties, for such to rob all their nobler, godlike elements of vitality, just to expend it on a sensual, debasing passion, is physical, mental, and moral suicide. Red-faced, bloated, coarse-grained, gouty subjects, it matters little what becomes of them. About as well go to Texas and be shot as anyway, or stay and kill themselves, because worth little anyhow. but for light-built, fine-skinned, fine-haired, spare-built, sharp-featured, light-eyed persons of either sex, to indulge, even in wedlock, as often as the moon quarters, is gradual but effectual destruction of both soul and body, because they already work off vitality faster than their feeble vital apparatus manufactures it. This excess of expenditure over supply occasions their sharpness. A surplus would render them fleshy. Now to add the most powerful drain of all to their already sparse supply must sooner or later, according to their vigor of constitution, render them bankrupts of life. It will not kill you outright. It will first weaken the garrison of life, and thus open the door for disease to come in and attack the weakest part, and complete the work of death in the name of other diseases. As bees, by swarming too freely, leave portions of their hive unprotected, and thus allow the deposit of those destructive worms which a full supply of bees would have prevented, so this indulgence drains the system of vitality, and of course leaves the weaker organs especially debilitated, till disease thus invited sets in, destroys the feebler organs, and ends in death. Attributed, however, to consumption, dyspepsia, gravel, nervous, heart, and other affections, according as this or that organ is naturally most feeble, but rarely to its true cause. Ask any medical man conversant with diseases having this origin, and he will tell you that no other cause of disease equals this, either as to number, or aggravation, or difficulty of cure. Hear Dr. Woodward on this point. That the evil is widespread and exceedingly injurious cannot be denied or doubted. A great number of the ills which come upon the young, at and after the age of puberty, arise from this habit, persisted in, so as to waste the vital energies, and innervate the physical and mental powers of man. Nature designs that this drain upon the system should be reserved to mature age, and even then that it be made sparingly. Sturdy manhood, in all its vigor, loses its energy, and bends under the too frequent expenditure of this important secretion, and no age or condition will protect a man from the danger of unlimited indulgence, legally and naturally exercised. In the young, however, its influence is much more seriously felt, and even those who have indulged so cautiously as not to break down the health of the mind cannot know how much their physical energy, mental vigor, and moral purity have been affected by the indulgence. No cause is more influential in producing insanity. The records of the institutions give an appalling catalogue of cases attributed to it. A doctor in Brooklyn thus writes to the author of Facts, etc., to Young Men. Brooklyn, December 19, 1840. In my own practice, I think I have seen the following results of masturbation: involuntary emissions, prostration of strength, paralysis of the limbs, hysteria, epilepsy, strange nervous affections, dyspepsia, hypochondria, spinal disease, pain and weakness in the back and limbs, costiveness, and in fine, the long and dismal array of gastric, enteric, nervous, and spinal affections that are so complicated and difficult to manage. Dr. J. A. Brown of Providence writes to the same source as follows, that it is an evil of vast magnitude. No physician who has been in the habit of tracing effects to causes can for a moment doubt. I, sir, could tell of hundreds who labor under incurable maladies produced by this practice, and I do not believe that I have a better faculty for obtaining such information than many others who are and will be dumb on this subject. Another physician writes that 7/8 of all the bodily ills and diseases of the people are caused or greatly aggravated by self-abuse or excessive legal indulgence. Nor is this all, nor the worst. The loss of this secretion is the loss of vitality itself. As must readily be apparent, it embodies the very quintessence of parentage, in order thereby to impart this quintessence of parents to offspring. to dwell on this point, however important, is unnecessary, because so evident. Now, it is a well-known principle of physiology that when any organ is especially overtaxed, it robs the other parts of the system of vitality to supply its own taxation. Thus, overloading the stomach causes mental lassitude and muscular debility, because the stomach withdraws energy from the brain, the muscles, and wherever it can find it, to enable it to discharge its burden. Now, overtax this secretion, and it withdraws energy from all the other parts to resupply the drafts. Doing this frequently diverts the energies permanently from the other organs to this, and those who get into the habit of being bled frequently soon get full of blood, because they overtax the blood-manufacturing energies by this drain, so that an undue amount of vitality goes to blood. So the frequent withdrawal of this condensed vital secretion causes a drain from all the other parts and organs to resupply it, and thus frequent indulgence causes the very life's blood to run out thereat. Well has wisdom said, "Give not thy strength unto women," and he who does must expect to be weak everywhere else. It inflames the whole system. But great as is the evil, especially to growing youth, consequent on this drain of vitality, that inflammation always and necessarily consequent on excessive indulgence in all its forms is much more prolific of both disease and suffering. Whoever indulges often, and weakly as often, in wedlock or out of it, will experience an unnatural heat, tension, tenderness, irritation, swelling, perhaps soreness in these organs, of course resulting from their inflammation. The immediate cause of this inflammation is twofold. First, intense action, in its very nature, engenders inflammation. And what action more intense and inflammatory than this? Secondly, in order to ensure intense action in this function, so as thereby highly to endow its product, a larger amount of nervous tissue is found ramified upon those parts of this apparatus more immediately brought into action than upon almost any other portion of the body. This contrivance is indispensable to pleasure, and this to the endowment of offspring. Nerve alone gives pleasure, but inflamed nerve gives pain, and pain proportionate to its quantity and the degree of inflammation. Now frequent action necessarily inflames, and this both weakens these organs and engenders disease in them and throughout the system. It fills the whole being, mental and physical, full of wild, excited, preternatural, irregular, abnormal, painful action. An inflammation thus caused is harder to be reached and more difficult to be subdued than disease of any other portion of the body, because while inflammation of the lungs, of the heart, of the stomach, of the bowels, muscles, head, etc., can easily be reached through the intestinal canal or else by external application, diseases of these organs, especially in women, can be reached or cured only with great difficulty. We have seen that excess produces inflammation, particularly in these organs. Now, inflammation in its very nature proportionally weakens and destroys. This law of organization is too well known to require proof or illustration. Excessive indulgence of whatever kind necessarily inflames, and therefore weakens and diseases the sexual apparatus, and hence that falling of the womb, fluor albus, and other common female complaints, as well as prostration, or pendency, or irritation, or priapism, or gonorrhea, etc. of males, which excessive indulgence always and necessarily creates. Nor once effectually impaired, does this apparatus ever fully regain its former tone and power, as with a dislocated joint, or affection of the stomach, or lungs, slighter and still slighter occasions of disease renew the chronic complaint. So indulgence, otherwise not injurious, now renews the disease and re-impairs the health, besides enfeebling both this function and its product. Allow here a single remark relative to the effect of indulgence, whether promiscuous, matrimonial, or solitary upon offspring. It has been seen that power of sexual passion contributes to the endowment of offspring, and its feebleness leaves them proportionally the less endowed. Now nature has provided for the retention of this secretion till the action and pleasure of this function rise higher and higher, and become most exalted prior to its discharge, in order that this condensation of energy and function may be imparted to offspring. Now frequent indulgence allows it to escape prematurely, or before this secretion arises to its highest pitch, and thus prevents that pleasure of its subject, so essential to the endowment of offspring. Indulgence even goes so far sometimes as to cause involuntary emissions, or at least on slight incentives, which of course weakens both the pleasure and the product of this function. Thus, excessive indulgence cuts off the very pleasure sought by diseasing its apparatus. It deteriorates the sexual characteristics. We have seen that overindulgence in all its forms plants disease in the sexual apparatus. Now, if this disease ended here, it would do great injury, but it goes further and does more. It deteriorates the sexual characteristics. That is, it impairs the manliness of the male and the femininity of the female. Now the entire manhood of the man, all his nobleness, dignified aspirations, efficiency, and manliness, are created by and depend upon this his mental and physical sexuality. So do all the beauty, grace, refinement, purity, elegance, fascination, and charms of woman. This is certain. Now in and by this injury of the sexual apparatus, overindulgence proportionally impairs the manhood and power of the former, and the beauty, sweetness, and charms of the latter. This result is necessary and universal. Destroy the sexual apparatus of animals by emasculation, and witness the effects. Compare the stallion with the gelding. What becomes of the proud and lofty prance, the noble bearing, the perfect form, the physical stamina, the free, bold, neighing, resolute, powerful horse? His neighing subdued, except as partially renewed by the arrival of the sexual season. His arched and thickened neck unstrung, his lofty prance exchanged for the steady jog, his mien humbled, his free spirit chained, his physical power greatly subdued, no longer the horse proper, but lowered, mutilated, and the mere shadow of that noble animal. Compare the bull with the stag. You find results every way similar, as also by comparing the ram with the wether. What but the perfection of his sexual nature gives the bull his force and power of endurance over the ox, even enabling him to endure what would kill two oxen? Why can the former be easily tamed and subdued, but the latter never? Why can a small bull whip a large ox? Why can the stud perform twice the labor of the gelding? The perfection of the sexual apparatus alone makes the difference. This principle applies throughout the animal kingdom, and is equally true of man. I once knew a eunuch, rendered so by his own hands, his voice effeminate and hackled, his tones pining and whining and complaining, the bass strong voice of manhood merged into the most diminutive manner of speaking imaginable, his look sorrowful and hapless, his motions slow and feeble, his very existence a burden, and all because his sexuality, mental as well as physical, was gone. No more the man, a mere thing. Now by a law of things, whatever impairs the physical sexuality thereby impairs the mental sexuality. And as overindulgence does this, therefore whoever gives way to this passion proportionally impairs his manhood and becomes the ox or gelding, or else effaces the charms of the feminine. The man lays down his nobleness, dignity, power, and manhood, and is no longer bold, resolute, determined, aspiring, dignified, but becomes depreciated, irresolute, undetermined. tamed and conscious of his degradation, no longer comprehensive in planning, efficient in executing, correct in judgment, full of thought, strong in intellect, courteous in manner, noble in mien and gallant to women. But he becomes disheartened, uncertain in his plans, and inefficient in their execution, and a drone to himself and society. So too the female, diseased here, loses proportionally the amiableness and gracefulness of her sex, her sweetness of voice, disposition and manner, her native enthusiasm, her beauty of face and form, her gracefulness and eloquence of carriage, her looks of love and interest in man and to him, and becomes merged into a mongrel, neither male nor female, but marred by the defects of both, without possessing the virtues of either. This principle furnishes a very excellent hint to those who would retain or restore their beauty, to preserve or restore this apparatus, a means of promoting beauty much more effectual than all the padding, bustles, and fashionable attire in the world. It diseases the whole system. If the diseases consequent on this inflammation were confined to that apparatus in which it originates, it would do great damage, as just seen, but it does incalculably more now, because it plants disease in the very bowels of the frame. We have also learned how perfectly reciprocal the relation existing between this apparatus and the heart, lungs, liver, stomach, kidneys, secretions, excretions, and each and all the vital organs and functions, in order thereby to propagate them all. Hence, whatever diseases it, thereby diseases them also. Disease in no other organ is equally prolific of disease in all the others. This is the physical citadel of health or of suffering, by capturing which you take all the others, and they, captured, life itself surrenders to death. Common parlance designates some clouds as weather breeders. This is a disease breeder, a true Pandora's box, the opening of which engenders all sorts and degrees of pains and sufferings that flesh is heir to. Dr. Woodward, than whose opinion none is more entitled to consideration, remarks concerning it as follows. Consumptions, spinal distortions, weak and painful eyes, weak stomachs, nervous headaches, and a host of other diseases mark its influences upon the one. Loss of memory and the power of application, insanity and idiotism, show its devastating effects upon the other. In the spring of 1837, I was consulted by the father of a young woman who had for 4 years been in the worst possible condition of health. She had consulted many eminent physicians who had prescribed remedies and regimen for her without benefit. On first seeing the patient, I was impressed that the cause of her illness had not been understood, which had rendered all remedies unavailing. Upon inquiring of the patient, I found that she had been the victim of self-pollution. I cautioned her to abandon the practice, prescribed some remedies, and saw her no more. More than a year from the time of seeing her, I heard directly from her parent, who sent me word that she had entirely recovered her health and energy of mind, that my prescriptions had entirely cured her. It impairs digestion and circulation. It thus robs the system of its required nourishment. Vertigo and heaviness about the stomach, etc., necessarily follow this excess, because it robs the digestive apparatus of the energy required to carry forward this function. It produces a gnawing, fainting, distressed, sunken, gone sensation along the whole alimentary canal, and is a frightful cause of dyspepsia, heartburn, etc., and thus robs the system of its very life and soul. An isolated example. Many years ago, an intelligent, well-educated man was brought to the lunatic asylum in Hartford, the victim of self-abuse, and rendered nearly idiotic thereby, as well as raving perpetually for food, which he would consume voraciously most of the time, if allowed. His keepers, however, refused food unless he would stop the practice. The struggle was terrible. His rampant appetite, aided by hunger, finally compelled him to desist, and he recovered. Nor does the heart escape. Indeed, it suffers among the foremost, as those will recognize experimentally who are at all subject to weakness or palpitation or enlargement or uneasiness of this organ. Nor can those affected indulge much without essentially increasing their malady. The kidneys in particular are diseased thereby, and hence it causes the gravel. It deranges the brain and nervous system. But its ravages on the brain and nervous system embody its most terrible consequences. To behold one physical organ after another fall a victim to this devastating passion, as house after house is consumed by the devastating flames, is indeed terrible. To lose limb after limb of the body, or large portions of the heart or lungs, or sight or hearing, etc., is irreparable and inexpressible by words. But to lose one after another of the mental faculties is inexpressibly greater, because these constitute the man. As Watts replied impromptu to Mrs. Rowe when she rallied him for his personal diminutiveness, "Could I in stature reach the pole, or grasp creation in my span, it'd still be measured by my soul. The mind's the stature of the man. Whatever enfeebles or deranges the brain and nerves, thereby impairs the very personality and entity of the man himself." Now we have already seen that this indulgence is most exciting, exhausting, and irritating to the brain and nervous system, that excess produces inflammation and disease, and also that nervous and cerebral disease both produces depravity and renders its victims most miserable where there is no other cause or occasion. Behold, in this wheel within a wheel, in the fact that this indulgence inflames the whole body, and especially the brain and nervous system, the reason why this excess causes more insanity than anything else except intemperance, which it generally accompanies. Of the 128 males in the McLean Lunatic Asylum in Charlestown, Massachusetts, in 1838, 24 were brought there by a single form of this vice. The report of the Worcester Insane Asylum for 1836 rates intemperance as the most prolific cause of insanity, and this passion as the second, of which it then had 26 victims. In 1838, of its 199 male patients, 42, or almost one-fourth, were the victims of solitary indulgence. A superintendent of a French lunatic asylum says, "It is more frequently than is imagined the cause of insanity, particularly among the rich." No cause, says Dr. Woodward, is more influential in producing insanity. The records of the institutions give an appalling catalogue of cases attributed to it. But when it does not go so far as to induce complete idiocy or insanity, it so far vitiates the nervous system as to leave its subjects completely miserable, self-abuse particularly so. Facts, almost without number, completely demonstrate the physiological law that disordered nerves produce mental misery, and as this passion deranges the nervous system, we see why its subjects are nervous, fidgety, easily agitated, fearful, afflicted with terrible dreams, melancholic, depressed in spirits, and most wretched, as well as partly beside themselves. In describing its effects, Dr. Adam Clark writes thus, "The sin of self-pollution is one of the most destructive evils ever practiced by fallen man. In many respects, it is several degrees worse than common whoredom, and has in its train more awful consequences. It excites the powers of nature to undue action, and produces violent secretions, which necessarily and speedily exhaust the vital principle and energy. Hence the muscles become flaccid and feeble, the tone and natural action of the nerves relaxed and impeded, the understanding confused, the memory oblivious, the judgment perverted, the will, indeterminate and wholly without energy to resist. The eyes appear languishing and without expression, and the countenance vacant. Appetite ceases, for the stomach is incapable of performing its proper office. Nutrition fails. Tremors, fears, and terrors are generated, and thus the wretched victim drags out a miserable existence, till superannuated, even before he had time to arrive at man's estate, with a mind often debilitated even to a state of idiotism. His worthless body tumbles into the grave, and his probation expires by acts of his own commission. Reader, this is no caricature, nor are the colorings overcharged in this shocking picture. Worse woes than my pen can relate, I have witnessed in those addicted to this fascinating, unnatural, and most destructive of crimes. If thou hast entered into the snare, flee from the destruction, both of body and mind, that awaits thee. God alone can save thee. Advice, warnings, threatenings, increasing debility of body, mental decay, checks of conscience, expostulations of judgment, and medical assistance will all be lost on thee. God, and God alone, can save thee from an evil which has in its issue the destruction of thy body and the final perdition of thy soul.